with the NFL.
Really?
More than any other human being associated with the NFL. You heard about recently how Jim Irsay was arrested and had found pills and $29,000 in cash on his possession in his vehicle. Well, he was at Indianapolis Colts training camp on Saturday. And he was giving out $100 bills to some fans who came to watch the team in Anderson, Indiana. And basically, one of the reasons he gave for having $29,000 in cash in his vehicle when he got pulled over with the pills was that he's a very generous guy.
Like Wes Welker.
Wes Welker giving away some money over at the Kentucky Derby. So he had nobody believed that, or I hope they didn't believe it, because normally when you're dealing with, I don't know how many pills he had and all that amount of cash, you're probably using it to buy some more pills or illegal things.
Right, and rich people stay rich not because they go around handing out $100 bills to everybody.
That's right.
You know.
So it always comes back to him, and he gets on Twitter throughout last season. It was always ended up being about Jim Irsay, which all the great owners are the ones that stay in the background and let their guys take care of business. What's up, boys? And Jim Irsay, to me, it's all about him. It's always going to be about him. And the fact that he has to go out and pass out $100 bills, the only reason why he's doing
attention,
and to go back to when he said, oh, I had $29,000 in cash, my car's, I like to be generous. No chance. Not even. No chance.
I did see where, so it would be a game ball to Kyle Rudolph. He's played 3 years for the Minnesota Vikings, and they went ahead and re-upped him on a 5-year extension, $36.5 million. And so his 3 years with Minnesota, 109 catches, 39 games, 1,000 yards with 1,055, and 15 touchdowns. Pretty, I mean, that's the way the tight end game's going. Those aren't just great numbers for a tight end, but decent numbers. So do you think they might have overpaid a little bit for him, or you think that's about right on par?
Well, something happened where now tight ends are one of the most valuable positions on
right, and they used to be one of the lowest paid position player was the
tight end. Grunt worker,
right? Right.
Block, get your hand in the dirt, catch some passes. But you've seen what some of the other teams have done with their tight ends. And some of these tight ends are like wide receivers anyway, aren't they?
They're hybrids, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the stretch four in basketball, how it's used to you play with your back to the basket, you rebound. You know, you think of Ben Wallace, you know, you think of some of the players. But now you got your Dirk Nowitzki, you know, you have your guys that shoot threes the way the three-point line is. And so that's the same thing with the tight end. It's a game of mismatches, so you want to get a tight end on a linebacker or a safety who doesn't have the hips to move and cover as well. And these tight ends, 6'5", you know, 6'6", they can move, great hands, they're strong with the ball. They're tough to cover with the safety because a lot of times that safety is for run support. The cornerbacks cover, you know, your nickelback. If it's your third best cover guy on your team, he's really not that good.
What was the most difficult thing with your transition with wide receiver in the NFL?
Just the amount of running you do. You think about quarterback stuff that you run a little bit, but really you're the game manager. You got to know where everybody lines up. You got to do a lot of other things when you're the quarterback. As a receiver, you're sprinting to the huddle. You're sprinting out there and you're running. I mean, you're like a track guy or a soccer guy. You just your body takes a little different shape because I played at Arkansas about 235. And then when I played in Jacksonville as a receiver, I played around 220. I mean, you're just naturally going to lose some weight because you're running so much.
That's amazing. 230, 15-pound different. That is amazing. Johnny Manziel, again, speaking his mind a little bit. We get a little sound. Matty T, if you could play that Johnny Manziel sound from over the weekend and him talking about his experiences. But join
the squad.
It's absolutely
a different intensity. I mean, we had a team meeting yesterday and on the board, it shows how many days we have till the first preseason game, second, till our first game. Like, it's getting close, it's getting real. Personally, I've had an incredible fan base that has followed me, and it's truly incredible. I'm truly thankful to have those guys. But more than anything, it's not just my number, my name on the back. It's Cleveland. It's the Browns. And it's awesome to have the fan base that we have for this team, not just me. My life is incredible. I'm blessed to be in this position, and I'm going to have fun each and every day, whether it's practice, whether it's training camp, whether it's during the season going out and playing a game, which will be even better, or it's going out in the off season or playing golf or hanging out with my family. Life's fun. Enjoy it while it's here.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
Okay, Matt.
I love
that clip, Joe Kim Noah. Love that clip from Joe Kim Noah. And this is obviously a lot of talk about Johnny Manziel, but more importantly, the whole idea of a rookie coming into that type of situation with as much attention as he's getting, as much hype as he's getting, and now you have the owner having to come out and answer specific questions about you. What is that dynamic going to be like with some of the older guys? And you already got Brian Hoyer there.
You got to prove yourself. That's the truth. Rookies, when you're there, you don't really speak. you kind of do what it said.
Good to see you, Coach.
How you doing? All right. Matt Jones. All right. So it'll be interesting. He almost needs to – you can have fun. Nobody's saying you can't have fun, but think of some other players that have a lot of fun that you don't hear about. You know, Tom Brady's having fun. Derek Jeter's having fun. I mean, you can think of some people that have fun off the field. You don't need to hear about it every day, every night, every time you go out. We don't need to hear about it.
You know what the funny thing is Texas A&M, didn't they cut him off from the media his freshman year?
Well, I want to say his last year there, they maybe only did one day a week and kind of
toned him down a little
velvet
bit.
Velvet glove. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He's got to learn something. Coach Dwight Adams joining us in the zone. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. Very excited to talk with you. Now, you are currently living down in Tiller.
I moved out of Tiller into Dumas, and I lived out in the country on the farm, and I just moved into Dumas.
So
now
you need a little more excitement in your life.
Yeah.
Tiller was getting a little too slow for you. You need to pick
slow,
it up a notch in Dumas.
A red light would catch me most of the time.
What kind of farm was it?
It was we had cotton, soybeans, and corn. And so it was my wife's home place, and so we moved out and moved into town, really. My wife ought to have been a mailman because she likes to drive and get out so much, so we moved into town.
She likes the action.
Save some gas money.
Yeah, the energy of the city, the heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, about 3 or 4 years ago.
How long you guys been married?
56 years.
Oof, 56 years.
Yeah. Hey, Pat. Seems like yesterday.
Time flies.
Well, now you have a long history, of course, with the Buffalo Bills, but you get a long, long history in football. And what years exactly were you with the Bills? Buffalo Bills. What year were you with the Bills? Years?
Well, let me answer that like this. I left the University of Florida, and in March of 85, I went with the San Diego Chargers, Coach Coryell, for 5 years. And in 1990, I went with the Buffalo Bills, and they had been in their first Super Bowl, and so I was with them in 91, 92, 93 in the three Super Bowls, and I'm still with them. Now, I lived up there for 14 years at the Holiday Inn in the same room, and Joe stayed down south, and so I traveled the United States, and I was a scout, and then I was director of player personnel, and then I was vice president of player personnel. So I've moved back to Arkansas, and I'm still with the Bills, and I do schools in Arkansas and Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi.
Do you think that scouting, even 20 years ago, was with – it seems like there's just so much information now. I mean, guys can walk around with all their electronic devices, with a smartphone, iPad, iPod, and they're able to get all that information. Do you think it was – I don't want to use the word easier – but it seems like back even 20 years ago, you could get out and beat the street, and it was your hard work and connections and networking that really separated you, whereas now it seems like there's so much information that guys can get immediately on people.
No, you're right on. It's more they're more scrutinized now, and they go in, and there's more publicity put out. Now, I think there's a lot more people interested in the draft and what's going on in the NFL, but of their state, their players or their favorite players in college. And yes, I think it has changed, because prior to that it was a closed situation just for the coaches and scouts, and that's all it was, and you didn't share. And the newspaper people at practice would come and ask you who you're looking at. What are you looking at? Well, you'd say, well, that's confidential information. I can't share that.
Right.
And you still didn't. And now they, like you alluded to, because of this system, they know a lot more about it.
They know where you're at. Like if you're going to an Ole Miss game or whatever, somebody would see you there, and then that gets out that he was at Ole Miss. Okay, well, who's their three best players? He's probably looking at one of those
exactly
three guys.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And,
you got to stop tweeting about where you're going to be at, Coach, all the time.
Yeah, well, I hadn't gotten into that yet, and I facetiously told my grandson, who's a junior at Ole Miss, I said, I thought that stuff was just a fad. And I said, it's growing. You know?
Right, right.
That's amazing what cell phones and the things you're talking about now came about in the news media and the more interest, because it's amazing. You know, look at the combine now, how long it goes. And look at the high school all-star games you see
right
now, the Army and the Armor game and da-da-da.
Coach, these things are high-rated TV shows. When you talk about the combine, you have guys taking off work just so they can watch the combine 2-3 days in a row.
So they can scout them out so they can see. Yeah,
yeah. For their fantasy teams. I mean, you know, regular guys.
That's right. And fantasy teams.
Fantasy football, yeah.
And the high school combines now, and everybody's zeroed in. You're right. There's a lot of interest.
Have you ever had anybody from a fantasy league try to pay you just to give you a little bit of information on a player, just to try to get ahead of their partner in that league? No, none of that. None of that shenanigans.
I've had no shenanigans. I've had people ask me, well, who do you think? I said, you must be farming a fantasy team. And I said, this is confidential information
I can only share,
but with my team, you
sure
know. And I learned real early this, Pat. I was on the road, and I was with one of the great, great characters in football ever, scout with the Dallas Cowboys named Walt Jaworski. I loved him, and you would have. He ought to have been in all the Damon Runyon stories, you know. He played at Kentucky under Coach Bryant and then coached 100 years. And so we were standing there on the sideline and watching a practice, and a guy came up, and he said, this newspaper person came up, and he said, who are you looking at? Walt looked at him, and he said, the coaches. So,
speaking of coaches,
well, I want to ask him about Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, those Buffalo Bills team. One of the first teams I remember to run the no huddle, fast pace, kind of the way the game's going now. How much ahead of their time were they, and could they compete? I think Jim Kelly and that group, they could compete now.
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tell you, we had assembled a great, great group at that time, with Jim Kelly being the quarterback coming out of the Houston Gamblers, and the run and shoot.
USFL, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And but to go on into the no huddle, we were the first one, and Ted Marchabrota, who had been a quarterback in the NFL, and he was a great coach, offensive genius, and he was later the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And great, he used to play in this tournament. And then Elijah Pence tournament. So the story goes like this. So we were in a game, and we went in a 2-minute drill, Pat. Bam, bam, bam. We're in the end zone, you know. So Mr. Wilson, our owner, says to Coach Marv Levy and to Ted Marchabrota, he said, you know, that's a great offense. He said, let's make that a part of our regular game. And Marv tried to explain the gentleman that he was. He explained, and courtesy to Mr. Wilson, that's just a – and Ted Marchabrota spoke up.
Situational, yeah, yeah.
And said, that's just a part of, you know, the 2 minutes. And he said, I don't think y'all understand. He said, if y'all don't put it in, he said, I'm going to get somebody that will. Marv looked at him. He said, now that you put it like that, I understand it a lot better. That's the way the 2 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. And well, the defense can't. They have to stay basic.
And we used.
Right, yeah.
And it was a lot of problems for the defense then, and they had the same problems that I can remember. Defensive coordinators, good defensive teams, had problems because of substitution.
Right.
And the hand signals and the verbal and the so forth. And Kelly called his own plays. And so I came down here, and nobody, you know, the word back then, you know, in the time, Pat, they'd say, you never blitz a team, old quarterback. You know, they'll run on you and all
right
of that and everything. So about that time, the blitz came about, and Ted Marchabrota had moved on to the Indianapolis Colts as head coach, and I saw him here. at this tournament. And I said, Coach, I said, you blitzed us. I said, why? He said, because I knew Kelly wasn't going to run. And he said, I just told my outside linebackers, get you a point 3 yards outside of him and run for that point and be there because he's not going to run the ball.
Right.
And we'd try to flush him. And so the blitz really in the later years now, the size of receivers, the size of DBs, and more blitzing package has been dominant in the NFL.
Dwight Adams joining us here in the zone from the Pat Summerall Celebrity Golf Tournament, thanks to the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. I wanted to ask you about your scouting and coaches, some of them that have been a little more gracious with their time and allowing you to, whether it's come to practice, ask them about their players. Who were some of the guys that you've worked with in the past that maybe gave you more access and some that haven't given you the access that you'd like?
Well, the people that have given us access to their players, of course, Barry Switzer was outstanding. Pat Jones, who's here today, was outstanding at Oklahoma State. If he knew you, and Coach Bobby Bowden was another one that he would really let, you know, if you'd been in the business
sure.
a while as
he
a
trusted
coach,
you, right?
Or you'd been in a scout for a while, you know, they'd talk to you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd just hear the tape. Great person, great worker, great team leader, going to be a great player. Any other questions? And that was it, you know, but the more you knew somebody, if you'd known them for a long time, it's like a coach at Florida State told me one time. I'd coached with Mickey Andrews, and he said that Coach Bowden told him, he said, now, if you've known this guy for 15 or 20 years and you trust him, said, talk to him. Said, otherwise, great guy, great person, great
and that's
character,
it.
Learns easy. Anything else?
Just give him the company line.
Yeah, give him play.
What are some of the key words when you are talking with a coach? What are some of the key words that you listen to them say about a player that you want to hear? And also, what are some of the things on the top of your list that you're looking for from a player coming out?
Well, number one, I'd want to know about his character. Number two, I'd want to know about his learning ability. And number three, his work habits, whether he was a practice player and what kind of attitude he carried on the team, and a little more about his background, but character and work habits, you know. And I can always remember, Pat, that Marv Levy gave me one of the greatest pieces of advice, and I'd been coaching a long time. I was coaching in college 21 years, and Marv Levy told me this one time. He said, I want you scouts to remember this and going on the road. He said, smart players get better, dumb players don't.
It's pretty simple, but it's true.
I've heard Jimmy Johnson and Bill Belichick say the same thing. Yeah.
It's the true. IQ of the guy. Yeah.
The IQ, the more you can learn and absorb, and the more you study, and rather than you're going to have to really narrow it down to guys that have a hard time. We had one great player, and I wouldn't mention his name, but he was a great, great athlete, but he wouldn't play scheme. And he'd bust scheme all the time. And he won some games for us, but he lost some games for us, too, because he wasn't in the right place. And the other thing about the guy, you know, is how's that life going to affect him, you know, because now the college season is so long, you know, you play 14 games now in the SEC. If you go to the championship game and then the bowl game, and how you're going to affect them, because it's a longer period of time. And I'd ask rookies when they come in, I'd say, how you holding up? Because their season was just 10 games. Boy, Coach, I'm worn out. Because four exhibition games, 16 regular season games, and then if you go all the way through, you play three or four games to get
play
to the Super Bowl.
Games, yeah.
You play 24 games
yeah.
if you got – we did a lot of time. And Marv was a person, and I'm not evading your question or roaming, but Marv was a person that after the season was over, he would meet with them and talk to them about what we were going to do next year. And he said, I will see you sometime in May. You'll get letters. They weren't required. He didn't require them at the time because their bodies, and I'd ask Ken Hull, bless his heart, who's gone now, our center, a great leader from Greenwood, Mississippi, and Mississippi State. But I'd ask him, he said, boy, my body's just now getting over that, you know, and he'd played 12 years.
Wow.
But
thank God we got this guy healthy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't play that long.
But I remember Matt as a quarterback, and I remember him as a wideout at Jacksonville. Wasn't that a great place to play, Matt?
You know, Coach Del Rio, great coach, players coach. Then you had Steve Walters was my receivers coach the first couple years, great guy. Yeah, I mean, that I was very lucky in my playing career that I had Coach Houston Nutt, who played the game, and then I had Coach Jack Del Rio, who played the game. You know, so it always, they could always relate to you a little better.
Well, Steve Walters was a good player.
Oh, he was, and he was a great coach.
Great coach.
He's great person.
I didn't realize he was your position
coach. For the first 2 years there, yeah.
When you first went down there. Yeah. Who was the head coach?
Del Rio, Jack Del Rio.
He was the head ball then.
Yep, all 4 of my
years
there,
what a good player he was. We played them when I was at Florida. We played them at Florida and beat them. John Robinson, his coach, and we went out there the next year and tied him at the Coliseum. But I tried to recruit him out of high school.
Yeah,
in California, and we had a guy. I thought, boy, if we could get him, we had Wilbur Marshall and some of those guys. But
how about the Bills this year, Coach?
Well, we're
got a little bit of transition. What is new ownership?
EJ Manuel's the second year quarterback. You drafted Sammy Watkins, who's probably the best receiver in the rookie class.
Yeah. We've been in transition for about the last 14 years. We haven't been to the playoffs. And Mr. Wilson, our owner, bless his heart, just passed this spring. What a great owner. What a great person. You would have enjoyed him, Matt, playing for him. And anyway, we got the coach from Syracuse, and we're a young squad, and it's totally been in transition. And you alluded to Watkins. He's one of the great ones. He's in the mold now. He's like Megatron and those guys now, those great ones. But he's like Andre Reed,
right?
Our guy that's going in.
And even
an
Andre
thing.
Johnson from the Texans, that style. Yeah, he's not the 6'6 guy, but he can do it all. Yeah,
he can do everything, and it's amazing. E.J. Manuel was hurt last year, and we had a couple of other guys that took some snaps and improved, but we played good defense.
Was it Ryan Fitzpatrick played last year with the Bills?
No, year before last.
It was year before last. He had one of the great quotes. He had one of the great quotes where he said, "The NFL or professional sports is maybe the only profession where graduating from Harvard works against you."
I think he had a perfect Wunderlich score or something. Yeah.
They go, this kid went to Harvard. He can't play football.
Right.
But certainly, you want to talk about a guy that learns fast.
There's more guys now, you know, like Fincic with the Bears in 85, you know, a good safety. And there's a lot of guys out of the Ivy League now, some guys that are playing. But anyway, we've got the nucleus of a good offense if Manuel stays well. And that's true with every quarterback because a quarterback is more than 1/11th of the team. And if he stays well, and we've got a good running back now. He's been productive for us. A guy named Spiller out of Clemson. Also. And he's a guy that's got some size and can run. Our kicking game has been pretty good. Mormon, I think, is about his 50th or 60th year in the NFL. And I'm being lighthearted about him because we got him out of the USFL out of Pittsburgh State in Kansas. But, you know, that's the other thing about the game of football, the kicking game, the special teams are just another third engine, and they're so important. People don't realize what a field goal kicker or a good punter or good cover teams.
Coach, I hate when you say field goal kicking and you talk about the Bills and how important
it
is.
Can Scott Norwood go around Buffalo?
Coach, I don't even want to go down that road, but absolutely, you're right.
He was there. Then the first Super Bowl against the Giants was 32 seconds to go in his 37-yard field goal. And Scott Norwood was an outstanding kicker, wide right. And he just almost went into obscurity
then.
A highly intelligent person that had been a teacher and a class act. And he just was a recluse almost for a while. But, man, then we got Steve Christie. And we got Chris Moore out of Alabama. He went to Alabama. He said, as a quarterback, I said, how long did you stay there? And he said, about 10 snaps. And he said, then they moved me to strong safety. And he said, I said, how long did you stay there? And he said, about 5 snaps.
Going back to that, the Super Bowls and unfortunately not winning one. What's the atmosphere around the organization during those times? And how do you guys get back to competing on such a high level after going through such a difficult defeat?
Two things to answer your question. One is Marv Levy was the reason that we got back. Because Marv was so zeroed in and giving the players a scheme of goals and keeping up with them. And we had great talent now with Thurman Thomas and Kelly and Andre Reed. And we'd had some other Don Beebe.
Sure,
great receiver.
Yeah, of course.
Pete Meslars, Frank Reich as our backup quarterback. And we had Bruce Smith,
Daryl Talley,
yeah. Linebacker, yeah. Bruce Bennett.
Those were some talented teams.
But we led the conference in attendance for 5 years in a row. And, you know, Buffalo is a small market city, but everybody's in the stadium. And we averaged 77,000. And Marv Levy was the guy and had guys like Ken Hull. The leadership. Andre Reed was still a young guy and could really run. And we had James Lofton.
Yeah.
We had Davis that we'd gotten from the Green Bay Packers.
Running back Davis, yeah.
And we had House Ballard. And we had some depth because prior to 97, you could build depth because that's when the CBA came in.
Cornelius Bennett,
Bennett from Alabama.
I remember those Buffalo teams, yeah.
Biscuit.
Woo! Coach, you're the best. We got to take a quick break. I appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, Coach.
Thank you, man.
We could talk to you all day.